It's half past eight.
It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, you match your wits against those of Lucky Strike's board of wise men. You furnish the questions, and our experts try to answer them. For every question used, Lucky Strike will reward you with $10 in war stamps. If the question is muffed, you get a total of a $50 war bond plus the 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid. And all questions become the property of Information Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, like old man River, Information Please, you know, just keeps rolling along, unpredictable, and go as you please. Tonight, our two old hands are here, John Kieran and Franklin P. Adams, reinforced by the popular author and sports authority, Paul Gallico, and by the eminent attorney, author of City Lawyer, Mr. Arthur Garfield Hayes. Now, we're going to begin with a question that comes to us from Walter Reed of Dallas, Texas. I'm going to describe to you the itinerary of certain famous people, either of the past or present, who went from one place to another. I'll name the places. You tell me who the people are. The first person went from San Juan to Vichy to Washington. Mr. Hayes.
Leahy.
Leahy, yes. What was his first name, Mr.?
William O. Leahy.
Oh, no.
William D. Leahy. D. Leahy.
O. Leahy is a song. William D. Leahy, yes. Governor of Puerto Rico, ambassador to France, and now chief of staff to our commander-in-chief, President Roosevelt. And here's another one, another itinerary. Lima to Moscow to Ankara. Who went from Mr. Kieran?
I think that was Ambassador Steinhardt.
Yes, it was. Ambassador Steinhardt. First ambassador to what country?
He went to Sweden first, though.
I don't know whether he went to Sweden.
He was in Sweden before he was in Moscow.
Oh, we left Sweden out, excluding the Scandinavian.
I know. I could have answered it if you mentioned Sweden.
Oh, I said it. Should have made it harder for you, and it would have been a little easier for you. Ambassador to Peru, Russia, and Turkey, at any rate. Here's another. Here, this is a long itinerary. Pittsburgh to Chicago to Cincinnati. St. Louis to Cleveland to Cincinnati to New York.
Lucky Strike salesman.
That was very gracious of you.
Might be a ball player.
That's right, Mr. Adams. Good going. Might be a ball. Now, pick a ball player. You want me to go over the cities again, Mr.
Stay over here.
All right. Pittsburgh to Chicago to Cincinnati, St. Louis to Cleveland to Cincinnati to New York.
You mean on a one trip or on a play with those different clubs?
I guess he must have played with those different clubs.
Gee,
where did he wind up?
He wound up.
He's now with the Giants.
No, I think Yankees.
Oh, that catcher that.
You've got it, Mr. Gallagher.
Yes.
Ralston.
No.
Helmsley. Raleigh Helmsley. That's the chap.
Very good, Mr. Gallagher. Raleigh Helmsley, yes. Veteran catcher. He certainly has been around. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3. And how about this one from Roy L. Raskovar of Baltimore? This is a very simple musical question, gentlemen. Each of the songs that's going to be played should suggest to you some kind of offense or misdemeanor. Just tell me which one it is. We get 2 out of 3. If we're lucky, let's have the first, Mr. Kahn. Plus, you have to know what the song is about.
Otherwise, it's good.
Oh, you like that. You wouldn't care to guess, Mr. Adams.
No, I have no idea what
it doesn't bring any offense to mind at all.
Sounds like you might have stolen a kiss or something.
No, it's...
No offense.
Take it on that. It's Tell Me Pretty Gypsy. That's the name of the song. What's the offense?
Fortune telling.
Fortune telling, yes. Is fortune telling an offense, Mr. Hayes?
Yes, sir. In New York State.
In New York State. Well, how is it that we sometimes see in these tea rooms placards saying... your fortune told.
They're hauled up every once in a while when somebody kicks about it, but the law isn't generally enforced unless somebody makes an objection.
Well, there are a great many of those.
Oh, yeah. It's generally ignored.
What's the fine for telling fortunes?
Depends upon the disposition of the magistrate.
I see. Well, the disposition of this magistrate is to mark you wrong on that one. Now, here, the second one I think is a little easier. Let's have it. Mr. Carey.
Panhandling.
Yes, panhandling. What's the song?
Brother, can you spare a dime?
Yes. And Mr. Hayes, begging or panhandling also is an offense.
It is, yes. General applies there.
Same applies there. It's not generally enforced, but you can hail a man into court for panhandling.
Correct.
Is that true in other states besides New York State?
I don't know.
Cautious, aren't you? All right.
I'm a lawyer.
Very good, Mr. Kieran. Now the third and last. Mr. Adams?
Jilting.
Jilting, yes. No, yes. Well, jilting, of course, is not a legal offense.
No, but what is there was I waiting at the church.
Right. And what is the legal offense of which jilting is a... your own particular way of putting it.
The groom didn't show up.
Sure. Mr. Gallico.
Breach of promise.
Yes, breach of promise.
This is not a legal offense in New York State.
It is not?
Not anymore. It was outlawed by the legislature.
Yeah, I wish I'd known that.
There's no such thing as a breach of promise in New York State any longer.
I wouldn't be here tonight if I knew that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Hayes. A great many hearts will beat lighter tonight as a result of having heard what you said. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. Thank you, gentlemen. How about this one from Mrs. E.C. Stewart?
It's known as the heart bomb law.
Right.
Are you trying to get a little legal information for you?
I'm giving it.
Let's see. We were on Mrs. Stewart's question. Mrs. Stewart's question from Menlo Park, California. This is about some trinities, people who went in threes. Who were the three who wanted to go to Moscow? The three who wanted to go to Moscow. Now, these are characters in fiction. We can name a great many people who want to go to Moscow, and are not getting there. But these are characters in literature.
It's a piece of verse, isn't it?
No, it is not, Mr. Adams. It is in a play. Mr. Adams, it is in a Russian play, Mr. Adams. Mr. Adams? That's right. What's the name of it? The first two names?
Brothers.
No, sisters. The three sisters.
Three sisters.
Well, you just rejected it, Mr. Adams, that's all. The Three Sisters by Chekhov wanted to go to Moscow, and if you haven't read The Three Sisters by Chekhov, you didn't get the answer. Now we have to get the next two right. Who were the three who wanted to marry the same prince? The three who wanted to marry the same prince. Oh, that's not very hard, gentlemen. Not very hard. Have you never heard the story of Cinderella and the two sisters?
Sisters, yes, that's right.
Remember that, Mr. Gallagher?
Now I remember it perfectly. It
comes back in a rush, doesn't it? Cinderella and the two sisters, of course. And who were the three who loved members of three different branches of the armed services?
That's a song.
That is a song, and it is not by Chekhov, Mr. Adams.
It's a hit parade song, and I don't remember it, but it's the Army, the Navy, and the U.S. Marines.
Yes, well, you practically got it. They were the three little sisters. One loved a soldier, one loved a sailor, and one loved a lad from the Marines. Well, Mr. Adams, I must say you were the only one who came through on this question. Not enough, however. That sends a $50 war bond to Mr. Stewart and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica and passes us on to Stanley A. Wise's question, coming to us from Germantown, Pennsylvania. What issues were involved in these famous legal actions in which the following were parties? The first is Sir Roger Casement. And what was the issue involved, Mr. Hayes?
Casement was a spy, having been in Germany and gone back to Ireland and starting the Irish Revolution.
Yes.
Irish revolt against England.
What was the result of the trial?
He was executed.
He was convicted of high treason and executed. Yes. Now, what was involved in the case of John Peter Zenger?
John Peter Zenger was a printer of Philadelphia, who was a printer of New York, who was defended by Hamilton was the name of the lawyer who came over from Philadelphia, yes, and defended him, claiming he had a right of free speech, and it was up to the jury to say whether or not he was guilty
and what
libel, and the jury acquitted him.
Yes, it was.
At that time, it was claimed by the court that the court could instruct the jury that if there was a publication, the defendant was guilty of libel. And Hamilton argued that the jury was to determine the question of fact, not only of publication, but of libel.
Why is that a claim that's an important case in our country, Mr. Hayes, Mr. Adams?
Because that was the president for freedom of speech.
Yes, freedom of the press, a part of freedom of speech. Quite right. That was all the way back in 1735, so that our tradition of free speech and free press goes back a long way before the Constitution. How about John Ruskin? What issue was involved in a famous action in which Ruskin was involved?
That was right.
Let's see if Mr. Kieran knows, Mr. Hayes.
Well, Ruskin was found guilty of libel in reflecting on the artistic ability of James Abbott McNeil Whistler when he wrote that he had heard of incidents before in his life, but never had heard of the incidents of a coxcomb charging 500 guineas for flinging a pot of paint in a public's face, and he was found guilty and fined to the extent of one penny.
One farthing. It wasn't as much as a penny.
Well, one farthing.
That's a perfect account of the case. You don't see any flaws in that report, do you, Mr. Hayes?
No. There's been a book written about it that I've come across.
He just quoted the book. Of course there's a book. That's exactly right, Mr. Kieran, a famous case of libel. Now, how about this one from Mrs. Pauline Collins of Elmhurst, Long Island? Where in poetry or song does each of these repetitious animal sounds appear? Which I will now do for you to the worst of my ability. The first is meow, meow, meow. It appears where? What? And what?
Three little kittens. They lost their mittens. Meow, meow, meow.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Kieran. That's right. Now, the second animal sound... This is really an animal sound. It's just a refrain. Tira-lira. Mr. Adams.
That is a song and also a book by Laura E. Richards.
Laura
E. Richards. Tira-lira-lira in the spring.
Never heard of it. Oh, that's different. Now you convinced me. A book by Laura E. Richards and a song called Tira-lira-lira in the spring.
Yes, sir.
And is it used anywhere else, Mr. Kieran?
Tira-lira by the river or something like that.
That's the only one I know. What's that from, Mr. Kieran?
That's what I'm trying to think.
Let me tell you?
Yes.
I got down here. No, no credit for me. It's from Lady of Shalott.
That's right.
Tennyson's Lady of Shalott. From the bank and from the river, he flashed into the crystal mirror. Tira-lira by the river sang Sir Lancelot. All right. Thank you, Mr. Adams, for your two answers, and Mr. Kieran for your one. Now, how about oink, oink? Oink, oink. You'd find that where? Mr. Adams.
That might be Three Little Pigs.
No, I don't think that oink oink actually appears in the story of Three Little Pigs. I mean, you can imagine that it would. It does appear, however.
It does appear in a song called Old MacDonald Had a Farm.
Sure, that's the one. How does it go? You couldn't give us an immortal line or two.
Well, an oink oink here, an oink oink there, and here an oink there, and oink there.
That's the one.
E-I-E-I-O.
Now, Mr. Cross, quite unblushingly, reveals that one important part of his job is just to remind you of something you already know.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you know, if you just stop to think of it, that in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. But do you stop to think of it in selecting your own cigarette? If not, you may be missing out on some real smoking enjoyment. For better tobacco makes a better cigarette, and smokers, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. At market after market, year after year, we consistently pay the price to get the milder, better quality leaf. In Clarkston, North Carolina, for example, at auctions of the 1939 crop, the American Tobacco Company paid 32% more for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 32% above the average market price published by the United States Department of Agriculture. And that crop, properly aged, mellowed, and blended with other fine crops, is in the Luckies you buy today. Mr. Fadiman, have I shown what may be gained by trying Luckies?
Mr. Cross, the facts speak for themselves, and in just 55 seconds. Now here's a question from James D. Campbell of Philadelphia. I'm going to give you some statistics, and tell me which heavyweight champion these statistics describe. Here's the first. 6 feet, 6 1/4 inches, weight 252. Who is it? Mr. Gallico.
Primo Carnera.
No, that's wrong.
Willard. Jess Willard.
That's right, Mr. Hayes. You ought to become a lawyer, Mr. Gallico. You can become a sports expert, Mr. Hayes. But it's an easy mistake to make because it's probably pretty near. How about 5 feet 11 3/4 inches, weight 172? 5 feet 11 3/4 inches, weight 172. Mr. Kieran.
I'll try Bob Fitzsimmons.
Bob Fitzsimmons is right, yes. Is that pretty thin for a guy as tall as that?
According to the old stories, he never weighed that much.
He was very lanky, wasn't he?
Big shoulders and skinny legs.
Yeah. You wouldn't think he would weigh as much as 172. How about 6 feet 5 3/4 inches, weight 267? Mr. Gallagher.
That's got to be Carnera this time.
That is right. Told you I'd get around to you, Mr. Gallagher. Well, that's right. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. How about this one? From B.D. Weiler of Philadelphia. From poetry or song, quote a line that mentions 3 different kinds of cloth. That's to say, give me 3 lines if you can. Any kinds of cloth. Mr. Adams.
Purple and fine linen.
Purple and fine linen. Very good. From what's the source of the quotation? I think it's the Bible.
I think if that is right in the Old Testament.
I think it is in the Old Testament. Just where, I don't know. Mr. Kearns?
When as in silk, my Julia goes.
Let's have a line or two more of that here.
Then how...
Methinks.
Methinks how sweetly flows the liquefaction of her clothes.
Yes. Who wrote that, Mr. Kearns?
R. Herrick.
R. Herrick. Yeah, very beautiful lines by Robert Herrick. Now, that gives us 2 kinds of cloth. How about... Oh, you can think of other kinds of cloth. Mr. Kieran, is that your hand
gone
up?
Yeah, it was. It wasn't up by the top of my hand. Down where the cotton blossoms grow.
That's a good one. That gives us cotton. How about calico? Mr. Adams, can you give us a line with calico in it?
Paul Calico.
Oh. We'll drop out on that one.
You were my dream in calico. I was your bashful barefoot beau.
Yeah, I know, but you can't cover Adams up that way, Mr. Kieran. What he said will be remembered forever, I'm afraid. Here's one from Kenneth F. Weissenborn of Maywood, New Jersey. This is about famous trials. Here are 3 trials that I'll briefly describe. What trials were they? In this first one, the defendant was ordered out of the court by the judge. The defendant was ordered out of the court by the judge.
Well, it was one of that kind, Leo Frank in Georgia, was ordered out of the court by the judge because he was afraid that when the verdict came in, Frank were found not guilty, he might be lynched. And that question rose an appeal as to whether the verdict should be reversed because he was not in court at the time it was brought in.
It's essential that the defendant be in court.
Yes, sir.
Throughout.
We're in a colony. He's entitled to be there all the time.
Mr. Hayes, is there...
Another famous case, a man being ordered out of court was in the Reichstag trial, Dimitrov was ordered out of court continually.
Why?
Every time he got an impertinent or made an impertinent or arrogant remark, the judge ordered him out of court because he was standing the Nazis back in their heels.
You were present as a witness, not as a witness, but as an auditor at the trial, were you not?
I was there throughout the trial.
Well, he must have put up a pretty good show.
The most magnificent exhibition of moral courage that anybody has ever observed. With his neck in the balance, he merely put the Nazis wholly on the defensive.
Good point.
He actually won the acquittal of all the communists by his courage and nerve and audacity.
It must have been a great trial to witness.
Marvelous.
Mr. Adams?
Captain Alfred Dreyfus was also thrown out of court. Jack Hughes, they cried, and they turned him out by Mr. Dooley.
If he said that, they should have turned him out.
He should have stood in bed.
Mr. Kieran is unable to control himself. He's not ready to pass off. Here's another famous trial in which the defendant refused to save his life by escaping because he thought it his duty to obey the law. He could have escaped, but he thought it his duty to remain, because the law told him to, and he was condemned to death and executed. Who was that? This is one of the most famous of all trials.
Is that Sir Walter Raleigh?
No, it is not. Not that I know of, Mr. Hayes. It is the trial of Socrates, who was given an opportunity to escape. Remember, his friends told him that they could arrange to have him escape, but he preferred to drink the hemlock and die. One wrong on that. How about a general who was condemned to death in absentia? Mr. Calico.
De Gaulle was condemned to death in absentia.
That is the one, yes. One of the many honors that have been paid General de Gaulle was the fact that Vichy has condemned him to death. That gives us 2 out of 3. How about this one from Marion Condit of Rochester, New York? This is a musical question, gentlemen, and I think for this particular group, minus Mr. Levant, a kind of tough one. You have to identify each of these bassoon passages. Mr. Adams, do you know what a bassoon is?
It's in the Ancient Mariner.
I guess I've got that word going to say. All right, let's have the first.
Looks like an anti-tank gun, that's all I can say.
Mr. Gallico.
Scheherazade.
Attaboy, Mr. Gallico. Did you see this card before I did any time?
I certainly did. How do you think I got
that? How do you remember, Mr. Adams? Scheherazade, yes. Rimsky-Korsakov. That's pretty good. Let's have the second. Mr. Gallico?
It's very Tchaikovsky-ish.
Go ahead.
That's as far as I can go.
Can you count up to... what can you count up to? What's in
1812.
No, oh, no, it is... Tchaikovsky fifth. I don't know. We ought to give you some credit on that, Mr. Gallico, shouldn't we? I think we'll give you sort of half credit. Now, how about the next one? Mr. Gallico?
That's the Dvorak New World Symphony.
Where did you learn all these things, Mr. Gallico?
Writing sports.
Good work. Good. However, you'll never hear the last of it from Levant. Now, before we go on to the next question, Mr. Cross points out that whether you're buying a thoroughbred horse, a blue-white diamond, or a package of cigarettes, the same good common-sense rule applies.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's just this. Take a tip from the experts, for experts know the facts. In the case of cigarettes, the independent buyers, auctioneers, and warehousemen are present at auctions all over the South. They see just who buys what tobacco and the prices paid. So the overwhelming 2-to-1 preference of these independent experts for Lucky's, their stamp of approval, is surely your best guide to greater smoking enjoyment. Just remember this, at market after market, year after year, tobacco experts see the makers of Lucky's consistently pay the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder leaf. Now the experts know, as you do, that in a cigarette it's the tobacco that counts. And with these independent experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1.